out of the darkness of our past, out of the visions of our childhood, comes the one fear we thought we left behind, the one nightmare we hoped had gone away. But the evil we once invited in has found its way back home.
Much of what I say might sound bitter, but it's the truth.
Right.
Much of what I say might sound like it's stirring up trouble, but it's the truth.
Right.
Much of what I say might sound like it is hate, but it's the truth.
You are all a bunch of fucking assholes. You know why? You don't have the guts to be what you want to be. You need people like me. You need people like me so you can point your fucking fingers and say, that's the bad guy. So, what I make you? Good? You're not good. You just know how to hide. How to lie. Me, I don't have that part. Me, I always tell the truth. Even when I lie.
Hello, everybody. You're listening to Three Ring Radio. And this is part two of a three-part conversation. I'd like to call it an interview, but it's not really a formal interview. It's just like a conversation with the high priest of the Church of Satan, Peter H. Gilmore. What a cool dude. But hey, check out a Three Ring Radio if you're interested in listening to all of these shows, because I have actually four shows with Peter Gilmore. And they're all available for sale at threeringradio.com. So anyone interested, if you missed one, if you want to hear all four in their entirety, check out threeringradio.com and pick yourself up copies of all four of the Peter H. Gilmore shows. Okay? This is a very special, I'm sharing something very special with you. I work with the Church of Satan a lot. I'm a member, and I really dig having conversations with Peter on the phone. He's very insightful, and he's given me a lot of great advice over the years. And so I thought I'd share one of those conversations with you. This is, we talk about the political climate of today, censorship, the passion of the Christ, among other things. And I think you might enjoy it. I'd love to hear from you. So again, my email address is always listed on 3ringradio.com. And please, keep in touch. Enjoy the show. And boy, I'd like to tell you that I you know, I did try to throw Peter some curveballs. I try to piss him off. I try to poke a stick at him once in a while. But he just won't have it. The guy's unfuckable. I'm telling you, you can't fuck with Peter. Listen up. I play some of what I recall. I think I got an email from him saying that these are some of his favorite songs I'm going to play after this acoustic remake of Iron Maiden's A Number of the Beast. There's a couple songs on here I think Peter had said are listed as some of his favorite songs. Take a listen. 3ringradio.com. Enjoy.
You can get into the idea of promoting sort of radical Christianity, and, you know, we have the spectacle of Mel Gibson's The Passion of the Christ out there. And, you know, aside from being fairly dull and, you know, being pretty much you know, a clockwork messiah,
I love that term.
You know, it really is something that can be used by a lot of Christians to say, hey, look, you know, the Jews and the pagans tortured, you know, our Messiah in the most horrible way possible. So now it's our turn to do it to them, you know, that we have the power. You know, that kind of turnabout in violence, and of course, like, the Christian church has done that, you know, over 2,000 years. When you watched the scene where, you know, Yeshua is being flogged, all of the little devices that are laying out there for the Romans to be using are all the same things that the Christians used on anybody they considered to be heretics during the Inquisition. So, you know, those tables did get turned, and the Christians became just as vile a repressor of people they disagreed with as was going on there.
bless your body and I'll make it burn. I have the fire, I have the force, I have the power to make my evil take its course.
The Passion of the Christ.
Yeah, I went this afternoon.
I've seen it. What did you say you thought it was boring?
Yeah, I thought it was actually pretty dull. You know, I kind of expected better crafted imagery from Mel Gibson because he did some pretty nifty things in Braveheart.
And did he do anything with Braveheart, or was he just an actor?
No, he directed it.
Okay,
he got the Oscar for it.
Yeah, I wasn't sure. I don't keep up on a lot of that stuff.
No, that was a pretty powerful film.
I loved the movie.
Yeah, and he clearly studied, you know, predecessors like Alexander Nevsky by Eisenstein, and he knows some of his film history and looked at things, and you know this film really had what I'd say is most interesting about it is it had a fusion of like late Middle Ages aesthetics with the ultra-violence of contemporary shoot-'em-up video games. It's really kind of a Jesus movie for kids who've been brought up on like, ultra-bloody games. Because, you know, here we have, you know, a sort of this Messiah character who, you know, is not the usual pale, frail kind of Messiah. You know, like, he's actually kind of a, you know, fleshy, muscular guy. And, you know, so, but it gets to the point where they're just going to way overdo the torture to him, like, to something that I don't think anybody could possibly live through. Like, the amount of blood that guy lost was, like, gallons and gallons. Like, nobody has that amount of blood in them. It just became this sort of hyperbolic, ultra-penitente approach to it. But if you look back in art history during the times of the Black Death and the Great Famines in Europe, like from, say, 1300 to 1500, the way the Christians depicted Jesus was usually on a crucifix, you know, nailed to a cross, with lots of thorns and blood and
right.
it was as grotesque as it could possibly be.
Right.
So really, he's gone back to that aesthetic. You know, it's totally embodied that in his live action film. But he's got this kind of let's do some slow motion like of blood spurting and of nails going in and all of that. So he's got that video game kind of sensibility that that people will relate to because they like to watch these kind of action films and play these video games. So in a sense, it's a very savvy and clever approach to it, but it's presenting a very medieval idea. And the thing is, it does show the sort of vileness that's at the heart of the Christian mythology, that the very idea that there'd be a father of some sort that would mandate a universe where his beloved son, his most cherished creation would be tortured to death in the most vile way possible. Like, what a hideous, disgusting, grotesque idea that is. But that is really the heart of Christianity. It's not about love. It's about torture and death.
Oh, no, it's about fear.
Oh, well, of course. And the thing is, what was that was portrayed, like, the actor who's playing, Yeshua basically isn't some heroic stoic. He's, most of the time, he's in just showing you fear and pain.
Right, I saw the movie. I'm wondering, now, your upbringing as a child, I know you told me at one point you got the Satanic Bible at a young age.
Yeah, I read it when I was 13.
Okay. Now, your family, are they Christian Catholics? What are they?
They're nominal Christians, but not practicing.
Okay, so, I went to Catholic school and all.
Mm-hmm.
So, I went to that for, 6 years until I made two nuns cry and they finally kicked me out, okay? I'm proud of that. So I went there, and any church I ever walked in had this big bloody Jesus hanging up there.
Yeah.
And when I saw the movie, I thought it was the worst movie, one of the worst movies I've seen, and it wasn't. I think the story's great. Any crucifixion story, if you put it on the screen, I think it could be a good movie, so I'm all for that. I just thought the story, it was like only for Christians, because my wife, Amy, she has no Christianity in her family, nothing like that. So she didn't understand most of the story. It was not the Pontius Pilate's wife, that whole time in the Bible wasn't explained. None of that stuff was explained in the story. You just presume that you knew what was going on.
Well, a lot of it's kind of extrapolation. Like also, like Jesus being an innovative carpenter making taller tables.
Yeah.
It's like, okay, well, he's the Messiah and he makes taller tables. And I was kind of thinking at one point, is he being crucified because he made a style of table that didn't catch on? You know, he was way ahead of his time there, too. I mean, that was just such silliness, you know, to add, like, silly details like that.
That's right.
And also, like, it was so heavy-handed at the point where he falls for the second time and, you know, his mother flashes back to toddler Jesus falling down and being so upset. I mean, it's just like, okay, what happens next? Does a puppy get kicked? You know, like, it's just really so gratuitous and so obvious and heavy-handed.
You thought it was violent?
Yeah. I mean, you know, the flogging scenes were really violent.
But I saw that movie, and everyone's hyping it. I said these people haven't been out of the house in years, because I didn't see it any more violent than, the last Rob Zombie flick or anything. I didn't really see it as being that violent.
Well, you know, the thing is, what made it violent was, because it wasn't really stylized. It was meant to, you know, he tried to portray it as realistic as possible, and it was all concentrated on one person. Like, again, when something happens to lots of people, it's different than when it happens to one person. And when you get one individual who is basically, there's 2 hours of nothing but physical abuse going on. Like, every minute you're watching this guy, from the moment the you know, Hebrew soldiers come up to rough him up in the Garden of Gethsemane, to, like, the moment they, you know, finally take him down off the cross, like, they're kicking him and pounding him, like, every friggin' minute on the film.
You know, you're right. The only place I've ever seen anything like that is a gay porno. Okay? And that's all I thought of. When I taped it, I did the audio tapes. And I'm listening to it back. I'm like, listen to this, Amy. It sounds like a gay porno. Because it's like, ooh. Ooh.
Well, you know, I was kind of talking with that with a friend of mine who went and saw it. And we were saying, you know, that it was, the violence was intense and concentrated on. But it wasn't eroticized. Like, that it could have been, but it wasn't. He did pull back from that on a certain level.
Yeah, it was close.
Well, no, but it was close, but it didn't, and I thought that was interesting.
I'll send you the audio.
Yeah, well, that might make the difference. But, you know, what you saw on the screen, you know, could have been more erotic. But, you know, again, it depends on your point of view. If you're little Alex and you're videoing, you know, that kind of thing, you know, it really was his wet dream from Clockwork Orange.
Yeah.
There it was. Like, there's, you know, it was 2 hours worth of that.
So you coined the phrase, a clockwork messiah. Did you not?
Well, I said that, yeah.
It's a great one. When you wrote that to me in an email, I said, that is just wonderful. That's so good. That's, like, hit the nail on the head with that movie. I really...
Yeah.
And I was just amazed by the packed theaters and how much money it's making. And I'm watching... And I'm just watching these people flood out of theaters. And, you know, to me... That could have been a lot more violent.
Well, you know, the thing is, if you've watched movies that deal with violence, you know, there are movies that have, like, amazingly extended violence. But, you know, it all depends on how it's applied and what goes on. You know, if you go back and watch Ken Russell's film The Devils, you know, which deals with the possession of the nuns at Loudun, like, the violence that's applied in that movie, even though it's not a huge amount of it, is really disturbing the way it's used. The torture that's used on the nuns to get them to confess. And then when they, Abbé Grandier, when they finally torture him, you know, it gets to you because you've got some involvement with the characters, and it's applied so personally. It's that kind of personal application of such intense violence that makes the power.
Hmm.
You know, you can spread lots of gore around and, have, like, wholesale...
Sure.
I mean, because, you know, The Lord of the Rings had, like, characters being slaughtered, you know, by the thousands.
Absolutely loved it.
Yeah, and it's a brilliant, wonderful movie.
Great movie.
But, you know, the thing is, there's lots of violence in there, too. But it's not so personal.
Well, you know, I've seen a lot of violence. Like, what was the movie you just spoke about, The Devils?
Yeah.
I've never heard of it, never seen it. I have to see that.
Okay.
Now, have you ever seen The Last House on the Left?
Yeah.
The great rape scene? Not the great rape scene, okay? I don't mean to say that great. It wasn't great, but it was a great scene because...
Powerful, disturbing scene.
Holy moly, now that! It wasn't... There is violence. Uber, like, massive crate. I can't get that scene out of my mind. He carves his name in her... And her tits, and I was just like, fucked. I've never been so fucking freaked out by a movie like that.
Right. And it was, and again, it was because it was very personal. It was here's something being inflicted on this one innocent person, and it brings you in a way that is just, you know, that can make you feel.
I guess that's my problem.
You'll
I don't
identify with it.
What was that last part? I'm sorry.
You'll identify with what's happening. It's not something you can stand back from. Your nose is rubbed right in it, and you feel the reality of it in a way that you don't when it's broadly stylized.
You know, I guess that is, but you're right about that. I guess I just don't see Christ as an innocent victim. Okay.
Well, you know, again, it depends on your perspective.
Yeah, right.
When you look at the Hebrews, you know, the high priest and the thing is, that movie, again, it portrays Christianity, as we know, of course, historically, was created by Saul of Tarsus, not by any Yeshua, who was really pretty mythological.
By who?
Saul of Tarsus, who became St. Paul.
Okay.
He's the one who created that religion. And in fact, like, the stuff, he's the one who, you know, wrote the first letters, which were the first parts of the Bible, and all those Gospels came later, written by his disciples. He basically believed that he was being visited in his dreams by Jesus, who was long dead.
This is a journey. Journey.
Into the sound.
Would you join me, please, in welcoming me?
Redeem a full of college.
I got so much trouble on my mind. Refuse to lose. Here's your ticket. Here the drummer get wicked. The crew to you to push the back to black attack. So I sack and jab and slap the Mac. Now I'm ready to mic it. Hear my favoritism, Rolo. Never be a brother like me, go solo. Laser, anesthesia, major. Razor, blazer, brain and trainer. The way I'm living, forgiving what I'm giving up. X on the flex, giving that. I don't know about later. As for now, I know how to avoid the paranoid. Man, I'm padded up to here. Yeah, I wear, got them going in fear. Rhetoric said and register, I better go. And I'm quick to go sign the hard rammer. Quick to keep from getting jerked, changing some ways. The way back in the better days, raw, metaphysically bold, never follow the code, still drop the load, never question what I am, God knows, closer coming from the heart, what I got, better get some, get on up, hustler of culture, snake bitten, fist bit in the face, but the rhymes keep fitting, respect's been given, how's your living, now I can't protect, I paid off defect, check the record and record, inintentional wreck. Raised off as some intellect. Made the call, took the fall, broke the laws. Not my fault that they're falling off. Known as fair and square throughout my years. So I growl at the living dial. Black to the bone, my home is your home. But well, welcome to the Terror Dome.
Get down.
An era for the liberating pain. My 98 was 87 on a Ricky yo. So now I go Bronco.
Oh, don't you see how good, man? Oh, 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 don't you see how good, man? Yo, we got the boys on.
Crucifixion ain't no fiction. So-called chosen, frozen, apology made to whoever pleases. Still, he got me like Jesus. I'd rather sing, bring, think, reminisce. Found a brother while I'm in sync. Every brother ain't a brother. Cause a color just as well to be undercover. Backstab, grab the flag from the back of the lab. Told the rap, get off the rag. Sad to say, I got sold down the river. Still some quibble when I deliver. Never to say, I never knew or had a clue. Word was heard plus hard on the boulevard. Lies, scandalizing, facing. Traits of hate who celebrate with sin. I rope but dope the evil with righteous bobbing and weaving. And let the good get even. Come on down. But welcome to the Terror Dome.
Come on down.
Get down.
Come on down.
Yo, Biggie, 1990, all that,
out. Running the race against time, the pit and the pendulum. Check the rhythm and rhymes while I'm bending them. Snakes blowing up the line. powers of design. But upon the science of sinning, I'm either fight the power, cannot run and hide. But it shouldn't be suicide in a game of fool without the rules. Got a hell of a nerve to just criticize. Every brother ain't a brother, cause a black hand squeezed a Malcolm X the man. The shooting of Huey Newton from the hand of a nigga pulled the trigger.
Come on,
can blame somebody else when you destroy yourself first. Nothing worse than the mother's pain of a son slain in business hurt. Can't wait for the state to sign the fate. So this jam I dedicate places with the racist faces. Example one of many places. Weak in speech, I speak from a lesson learned in Virginia. I don't smile in a line of fire, go wild and burn it from basic drugs, even violence. What you do? Get your head ready instead of getting physically sweaty. When I get mad, I put it down on a pad. Give you something that you never had. Controlling, speed up, high rolling. God bless your soul and keep living. Never allowed, kicking it loud, dropping a bomb, break game, intellectual beating. I move as a team, never move alone. Well, welcome to the Terror Dome.
Yo, look at you now. You ain't wondering this way. Now look at you. Silly doo-doo. Wow. Boing.
Okay. So we're saying that you know, the inventor of Christianity was Saul of Tarsus, who became St. Paul. Now, his attitude was he was jealous of the Jewish Pharisees because of their tradition of learning, and he was the guy who really had a real fetish for wanting to be like them. So he hated them. He was jealous. He was extremely jealous, and he projected that into all the creation of the Gospels, which were later, they weren't written by any disciples of Yeshua. And so you see that in the movie, that, like, the hatred of the Pharisees by portraying them as this sort of pompous, power-hungry people who, you know, if you look at their position is this guy is a blasphemer and he's trying to, you know, undermine our religion. Well, they felt completely justified in getting rid of him. And that's what got portrayed. So it's like, if you had that perspective, well, then he isn't an innocent victim. He was a rabble-rouser. But it, you know, the thing is, there's always ways of looking at it. Because you remember in the 60s, like, they used to try to portray Jesus as a character who was like, you know, a radical in the 60s. Like somebody who was anti-establishment, which, you know, you could make certainly a case for that. If there was a character really doing that, then, you know, that's certainly a position that has some validity. You know, it all depends on where you want to go with that. Like, you know, whose side are you on? You know, which values are you portraying? And somebody can be anti-establishment, but you might actually be more in sync with the establishment than the anti at some point. You know, that's certainly a possibility.
So good old Saul, the inventor of Christianity. Boy, I didn't even, I've never known that, I've never heard this person's name.
Oh, well, you know, he's what they call St. Paul, and there's an excellent book by Chaim Maccabee called The Myth Maker, which it really examines the origin of all of the texts for the scriptures and basically, you know, shows exactly how it was created and that he created it, and you know, it's a great document for how Christianity came about. So, you know, it's worth reading if you have an interest in that. I mean, I think one needs to know something about that vile plague since it's still infecting our planet.
I like I said, I went to Catholic school and I went to some Christian stuff, but I have so much disdain for it. I just want to get the hell away.
Yeah, well, you know, and that's a healthy reaction.
Yeah,
it's not for our kind of people. You know, there are spiritual people and there are carnal people.
I guess the one question I always have for folks that are followers of, well, anything but followers of Christianity, I wonder, it's a Jewish religion. Am I wrong?
Well,
so there's a conflict to me why I would follow the king of the Jews and I'm not Jewish.
Well, see, the thing is, because Saul of Tarsus wasn't a Jew, what he melded with what he liked in Judaism, he mixed sort of Gnostic Greek religious ideas in with sort of these Hellenic concepts, he blended with Hebrew concepts, and he created a mystical religion. And it was a mystery religion, and it was also based on, of course, earlier crucified or flayed savior figures, because there's been quite a few over time. So he was obsessed with that kind of Hellenic mystery religion, and he blended it with what he was interested in out of the Hebrew tradition, and he came up with something that wasn't Judaism anymore. Because the thing is, the character that he based it on, Yeshua, was somebody who was Jewish, wasn't trying to abrogate Judaism at all. And, you know, as you'll see with the Essenes, the community that was off in the desert that they found all the Dead Sea Scrolls, like, they were still Jews, and they were essentially dealing with a lot of similar concepts. They were just another radical sect, because there were plenty of them in the Judaic religion at the time.
I see.
So the thing is, Christianity really isn't Judaism. It got totally turned around, because a goy took it over. He decided, like, I'm having a mystical vision of a Jesus, and I'm creating something, and it really is sort of a warped version of what Judaism was. So, you know, often we'll say Judeo-Christian, and the thing is, you kind of have to be careful with that, because there are some things in Judaic tradition that really aren't related to what the Christian stuff became.
You know what, that's funny. You have given me a better explanation, and when I went to Catholic school, I asked that all the time. And the priest could never answer most of my questions.
Well, they probably wouldn't want to, because they have vested interest in promoting certain issues.
I guess. I mean, I that was a great explanation. I've been kept in the dark all these years.
I'm glad it's
happened. What book was that now that you suggested?
It's called Mythmaker.
Mythmaker.
By a guy named Chaim Maccabee, who is a biblical scholar. And it's a paperback, and it's worth reading if you want to know about the origins of Christianity.
Well, I definitely want my answers to be my questions to be answered, my answers to be questioned.
You want both.
Yes. but I definitely want to answer my questions, so I will try to pick up that book and read it, find time for that. That's interesting, because it does plague me that I couldn't get a lot of questions answered. That's neat you went and saw the Passion of the Christ.
Well, you know, we thought it would be worth it because it's making such a stir, and you know, that people were running around trying to say, well, it's anti-Semitic, and it's anti-this, and it's anti-that. And the thing is, yes, you could easily make a case for it being anti-Semitic, because it basically, throughout the entire, you know, it starts at the beginning in the Garden of Gethsemane, and who comes to you know, beat him up but a bunch of the, you know, sort of soldier thugs.
Big-nosed Jews.
Yeah, and I mean, so it's kind of like, okay, well, and the thing is, what they don't make clear, and again, of course, that's intentional, that, you know, they're Jews too. And they're not really treated that way. They're already treated as outcasts or something different. And, you know, and again, Christians have a vested interest in presenting it that way because they really do separate themselves from Judaism.
I thought Mel Gibson did show a lot of profile. He did show off a lot of big noses there.
Oh, well, you know, that's part of what he was doing, you know.
Yeah.
That was clearly, you know, and all, again, you know, all the I guess it's the Sanhedrin, the council of the priests, are all wearing their, you know, fancy robes and carrying their staffs and being very pompous and, you know, let's make them look as stereotypical, you know, for that kind of a position as you possibly could. And, of course, one did show up to say at one point, going, wait, you don't have the whole council here. This is, like, you know, grotesque. And then, like, they just kick his ass and...
That's great. They beat him up. Get out of here.
It's like, oh, we don't want to hear that.
You know, I want meetings like that today. I wish our politics were like that today. George, you know, people kicking ass. I'd respect them a lot more. Get out of here.
We'll see if that ever happens. It may happen behind closed doors. We don't know. I certainly wouldn't let the press in for that.
So has the Church of Satan ever endorsed a candidate? I mean, I guess that's really very anti-satanic almost.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, because the real issue is that each person really has to find the kind of politics to suit their own personal ends. You know, whatever your issues are or what you're going to be pursuing in the politicians of your choice, wherever you're living. You know, if you...
Mm-hmm.
And that depends on how old you are, what your financial situation is.
Oh, you're right. I see politics as more finance, and it's amazing to me when I find a cash... And I've run into some folks in the satanic community that feel the need to talk to me and or want to talk to me, and they talk a tough talk, and they talk the Republicans, and they have all these... ideals that don't seem to fit their economic status. And I say, you know, I don't think voting Republicans for anyone under six figures. I see it as a business thing. I mean, when I had a storefront, I voted Republican a lot of times because it was in my best interest for my taxes and stuff like that, my finances. But,
Well, it's always about pragmatism. It's going to be what works for your situation at the time, you know, and whatever you're in at that point. So, you know, that's what's satanic. You find what suits you. But, you know, I'd say there is one bottom line that Satanists would all support, and it's the idea of trying to advance as much individual liberty as is possible. I think that we'd all agree with that,
mm-hmm.
You know, regardless of what other politics that we might be dealing with economically, that is a bottom line for us all.
But do you see Republicans, a vote for a Republican is almost like a financial, it's like a...
Well, yeah, it would be. Yeah, most
because
people see it that way.
The moral end of things is just ridiculous. It's like stupid.
Well, you know, on the whole, it really, there's so little difference between Republicans and Democrats most of the time anyway. Like, there is a degree, but it isn't as huge as like, sometimes it's made out to be. That you know,
sure.
It's to me, it's always a sad thing in this country that we are a very secular country, but when it comes to election time, all the candidates have to put on their God good guys and like start running to church and be filmed like coming in and out, like, oh yes, I go every Sunday, I have a personal relationship with Jesus and blah blah blah. And the thing is, at least you know with the Democrats most of the time that that's a complete lie. But you know, unfortunately with the Republicans, it isn't. And, you know, they really do think they have some kind of personal relationship with this mythological character. And that's what's scary about those folks.
Yeah, because I like Republicans, a lot of their views, except for the anti-abortion stuff and the morality they
want
to push.
Well, they want, see, that's...
But they talk... What?
Well, that they really have this agenda that they want to, you know, make the Bible the rule. They really want to do that.
That kills me. And they talk about less government. I can't stand them. They want to push their crap on it, raise children for us, all that stuff. Ugh.
Well, because, you know, see, there's the weird kind of... there's a paternalism both on the left and on the right, because
you're right.
On the left, they always think, well, you know, we know it's good for people, and even if people are too stupid to know it's good for them, like, we're going to make it happen.
No, even if people are too stupid to know it's good for them, we'll give them a check and let them sit on their fat asses and collect welfare.
Well, because that's what's going to be good for them. That's the idea.
Yeah.
You know, and that you know, we have to legislate this way because, like, they need this and they need that, whether they know it or not. And with the Republicans, they also think they know it's good for everybody, but, you know, for them, it's like, well, it's you know, because God said so, and we're going to make it go that way. So we kind of get stuck between both of them. Like, you know, we tend to need more libertarian people, I think, to move things in a direction that we'd like. But
so the way I see what you're saying, I guess, to sum up a lot of we've earlier spoke about revolution and politics, not the passion of Christ necessarily, but it seems like you're saying it's almost like the stock market. We just got to watch which way the flow goes and try to take advantage of it.
Exactly. And that's the way the whole world functions that way. It's like surfing the waves. You have to be able to surf. Don't fall and get swept under. You know, there's going to be troughs and there's going to be crests, and you have to know how to get out of the trough and up onto the crest. And the thing is, you're not going to be in one place the whole time. Things are going to change. The world is in constant flux. And the wise person sees that and learns how to take best advantage of all situations.
And creatively, if you get involved at poking a stick at the king, you can expect the IRS to be knocking at your door.
Yeah, yeah. You know, like, the thing is, you can be, it's easy to be repressed, you know, because the mechanisms are in place.
Not for me.
You know, you just don't sit yourself, don't make yourself a target or a martyr. The whole point is, let somebody else be the martyr. But never do it yourself. Like, the whole point is to find a way to again, like they did in Hollywood in the 50s, is put the ideas out there in a subtle way, but that really finally sink into people and change their way of thinking. That's really the only intelligent way of going about it. And it's been done before, and it can be done again.
You're right, Peter, and it's just common sense and... you know,
well, maybe it's not so common. I think, you know, the thing is, what's more common is for people to want to just react. And the thing is, that's what most folks who are repressors understand. They know that if you tie somebody up, they're going to struggle. And the whole point is, you know, you remember how Houdini would get out of the straitjacket?
Exactly.
You know, that's you have to be the Houdini, not somebody who breaks his arms trying to bash his way out.
But it is, I think it is common sense if you sit and think about it a little bit, because you're right, reaction is Shane wants to start, you know, causing trouble on a grand scale. I'm so angry. And I think, you know, you're right, though, you just got to figure out a way to do it creatively where you're getting away with it subversively and, trying to plant seeds in other places.
Right, because the thing is, what you're trying to promote is not something that people on a certain level really are opposed to. That people really want that kind of freedom of
expression. The freedom of a dog, yeah.
Well, yeah, it's like, well, the thing is, all laws and all rights are all mythological. They're created. They don't exist naturally. They're all privileges given out by whatever governmental structure is there.
Yeah.
And the whole point is to create a government that's going to give you the kind of privileges you want. And, you know, there are warring forces there. You know, different people have different agendas, and the whole thing is to find a way of moving the world in the direction of your will. And these days, that takes subtle magic, you know, not sledgehammer magic.
Okay, well, I can appreciate that. You had, I saw an article on the website, churchofsatan.com. You had just posted recently about gay marriages.
Oh, yeah, yeah, that's a big controversy. And see, there's something that's interesting in sort of a subtle civil disobedience way, is that, you know, the issue of...
Exactly.
...of trying to point out that this is something that people want, and that the legislation of Christian dogma that is really kind of underlying the prevention of it, it's now time for that to be swept away. And you know what I think, to keep the discussion broad, I think that the general populace at this point, because of the media, has a much more relaxed feeling for dealing with gay folk. Because, and I think it's due to, like, television shows that, you know, have shown gay characters, and, you know, and then people know gay folk who are maybe more open about that, that there's been this whole broadening of acceptance for that as being, it's a lifestyle. It's what some people are. It's not some kind of perversion or evil, which had been generally portrayed for quite a long time in this country. And so there's been a lot of media preparation for opening people's minds to saying, okay, we've got people that maybe don't do things exactly like we do, but they're people too, and we have to accept that. And people, I think, are accepting it. And the sort of groundswell of the civil disobedience is really kind of heartening. But while certain things are being repressed, I think that this is something that says, well, you know, maybe that repression isn't going to hit everybody. Because if it did, I think that would have been quashed so fast that, you know, you wouldn't have heard a thing. Because what they would have done at that point is say, well, let's revoke, you know, all of our changes in how we consider psychology and redefine homosexuality as being some kind of sickness and aberration. But, you know, they didn't do that. And they're not doing that. And even though there's this crazy idea of trying to have a constitutional amendment to keep that, which is really totally against the spirit of the Constitution,
yeah,
you know, which means that that isn't going to happen. That may be one of the straws that breaks the camel's back in the respect of that kind of repression.
And what do you mean?
Well, the thing is, like, the people who really do push for that are finally going to be exposed for the dogmatic, prejudicial bigots that they are. I think people in general, that I think general society will sit back and go, you know, that really isn't right.
You know, that's a refreshing outlook on it. I've been looking at it like it's just one big distraction, and I think it's a minute subject to me. I don't even think it is an issue. I think it is, but it shouldn't be. It's ridiculous. I mean, I think just by as a country, us separating church and state, that matters not. Marriage matters, you know, that matters nothing.
Right.
In our own constitution, our own rules of our country. They're just talking about religious crap about homosexuals and stuff like that.
Well, see, but see, you see that, though. You see that it is a religious issue. You know, that it's...
Did you say it is?
Yeah, well, the idea of legislating it is.
Yeah. Right, and it shouldn't be.
Yeah.
Because that's in our rule book somewhere along the line. It says separation from church and state. Marriage is a goddamn business deal. It's based in love. Yes, emotions, but it's a business deal. Let's face it, you know?
Well,
that's,
you know, see,
isn't it? Am I wrong?
Well, see, on a legal level, it is, certainly. But what I think it is, in a really more broad sense, marriage is the way people create family. That if you're not born of the same bloodline as somebody, the way you make somebody part of your family is by marrying them. That's what it is. You know, like when two people get together, they're now family. They're married. And I think the idea that same-sex couples want to have the same way of creating families that different sex couples do is something I think people will accept and see that there is, you know, why not? If you know, people generally, marriage isn't about breeding anymore, and it's not about forcing a Christian status quo. The legal ramifications of marriage, which is where the state comes in, because the other, you know, the traditional one is a religious one, but the legal one is something that, you know, people can work out with civil unions and such. But the thing is, like, what the hell? Call it marriage, because really marriage is not, you know, a civil union doesn't have the same impact of family creation as the word marriage does.
Or rights.
Well, it can. You can get the same kind of rights with that, depending on you know, how you deal with it. Like, you can get exactly the same sort of thing.
Really?
Yeah, you can. It takes some care, but it can be done.
Sure.
But the thing is, it doesn't have the same connotation of family creation. It doesn't, and I think that's what is wanted. I think that's the desire of the couples who are flocking to these disobedient civil servants who are marrying them. because they want to say, hey, look, you know, I've got this longtime partner, and they are my family, you know, for real. Like, the emotional and commitment bond is there, so let's have it recognized. Like, why should only a certain percentage of the population have that?
Yeah, I'm with all that. I just wonder why the media's agenda is to push gay down our throats when it's, I don't see it as a big deal. I think the gays have done this. I don't really care what anyone does in their bedroom. You know, it doesn't matter.
That would be the hopeful position that we all get to. That, that, you know, who you sleep with is your business and nobody else's.
You know, it's gross to hear about it. To tell you the truth, I don't want to hear about gay sex. I don't want to hear about your sex.
You know, the thing is, that, you know, my feeling is that, you know, whoever you want to choose to sleep with is the business of you and the people you want to sleep with.
Yeah.
But, you know, that we do have this law that keeps people who choose to sleep with certain people from doing these things is what the issue is. So I think, you know, that's why it's come to a head in that sense.
I guess I feel the First Amendment, like I said, sometimes politics and things that you are is like a fetish. And mine is the First Amendment. It seems to be getting beaten to hell over the last 6 months. And people are really focusing in on gay marriage. But if you don't protect the one, you're not going to be able to help the other.
Well, exactly.
And I wonder why the media wants to push this. It's not a lame, but it's just a distraction. It's minute compared to the First Amendment to me. But I don't mean to make less of it, because it's important. It's very important that they're pushing church into our rule book. I don't care about gay marriage or heterosexual marriage.
Well, see, I think that altogether it's showing that, you know, with the sort of censorship that's going on, that this is a way of resisting it. Like, that whole issue, the gay marriage issue, is one that the censors would like to shut that down, too. And it's not. That there's enough groundswell of going on, and it's getting attention, that people are kind of going, you know, you're trying to push Christian dogma on us. And the thing is, if you get a beachhead on the gay marriage thing, it'll help the free speech issue. I think it will help. I don't think it's a side or a lateral strategy. I think it's something that actually is tied into it. And which is why I'm sitting here, you know, thinking, you know, it's not completely hopeless. That, you know, because if that was quashed right away, then it would be like, oh boy, you know, the Christian dogma is winning everywhere. But it's not winning here. There's definitely a popular resistance to it.
Yeah, it's been pretty, I guess it has been pretty cool, that whole civil disobedience, which is, I wish there were more of that going on with a lot of the stuff they're doing. But just,
well, you know, but this could show people. See, the thing is, somebody would have to lead the way. And if this kind of issue is there and people go, you know, this works for here, well, then there'll be other ways of applying it. You know, so civil disobedience has always been a good way of achieving things. You know, it's worked in this country. You know, particularly it was galvanized during the 60s and it was shown to be effective. And, you know, people haven't had causes that they've, you know, all through up into, you know, the 80s and the 90s, everybody was so materialism crazy and, you know, just trying to, you know, get as many toys before they died kind of attitude. You know, like the whole idea of being civil disobedient was really not part of their repertoire. But that there is an issue like this that comes up, and some people are doing that. It's like, oh, okay, you know, that's an American tradition too. Let's see if we can revive that for you know, a broader base of issues. It's all part of the subtlety again.
I guess the gays are good for being overachievers. You know, that's one thing they are. They got a lot of money and power, it seems.
Well, you know,
they don't have children, so they have to overcompensate that way.
But, you know, there's a lot of. Of, you know, gay lesbian couples that adopt children. That's and again, that's what goes to show that the whole breeding issue of actually having the kids is not part of the way marriage works anymore.
Not true. I remember talking to Clive Barker about the whole thing, and he'd said the one reason he was so prolific and did so much is because he was gay, and he wasn't going to leave behind a child.
Well, that's what worked.
He wasn't going to breed like that.
Well, my wife and I decided we didn't want kids. You know, we decided that the things that we create are what we leave behind. So, you know, that's why we do the things that we do.
Same here.
You know, it's like, kids, not really interested in that.
Too many of them already.
Well, there's too many people in general.
Exactly.
And, you know, the thing is, there are good people that I know who are creative people who are also having children. And, you know, it's like if it works for them, I'm sure that they, as creative people, are going to bring some precious individuals into the world.
Yeah,
doing rich things. And I'm glad they're doing it, too. So there's room for all of these different approaches.
No, that's right. Absolutely.
And that's a good thing. You know, we like this idea of having different paths that people could take. You know, the idea is that there may be folks out there doing things that aren't particularly to your taste, but the whole point is, well, you know, you don't have to do that. Like, we're not requiring everybody to do these things. Like, the Christians don't have to all, like, you know, have, they don't have to, like, get turned gay in Mac. You know, it's like, if they're anti that, well, that's fine. You know, you don't have to do that. But the whole point is, if there are other people that want to do that, well, then they should do that. And if you don't like it, too bad.
Live and let live.
And you know, that's, again, the don't tread on me concept, you know, of everybody kind of finding their own way, which is fundamental. Americanism is really got to, you know, be there. It's this is not a majoritarian country. The idea of having a... See, we have a republic, not a democracy, and people kind of forget about this. The idea of a republic is you have something that is meant to represent all the different factions that you have. It's not meant to suddenly a majority comes into power and suddenly their issues are the only things that get dealt with. Like, that was not the founders' intentions, which is what can happen in a democracy. It becomes mob rule, essentially. You know, we have a republic, and the concept is that it's trying to be a balanced way of addressing everybody's concerns. And that again, is really the basis for this nation, which is a good, solid one to work from, because since we're a minority, we're outsiders, we have a strange point of view, we can at least feel comfortable that the basic foundation of this country is meant to support our unusual uniqueness, that we can have our way, because it's promoted by that basic legislation, the real fabric of this nation.
So, liberty and justice.
Yeah, you know, but it's not easy to have all the time. And the idea of the majoritarian concept is something, you know, that people try to push, like that tries to get snuck in there every once in a while. Like, oh, well, you know, what, since most people are Christians, well, let's just say it's a Christian country. It's like, no.
Are most people Christians, though? I thought we had more Muslims in the world than Christians.
Maybe worldwide. I haven't looked at statistics on that lately. It'd be, you know, Islam was the fastest growing religion for a while. And amongst unusual religions, like the whole pagan thing was really growing pretty fast for a while.
When the wars first broke out, I looked into the statistics. Us versus them, and then I saw Muslims outranked Christians and stuff like that. I said, oh, maybe I need to join their side.
They don't have the bigger guns, though.
Yeah. That's the truth. My ride's here. Yeah.
on the level of our unconsciousness. For example, what does the billboard say? Come and play, come and play. Forget about the movement.
Anger is a gift.
Again, that was part, this is part two, that was, I guess that was. This is the end, Three Ring Radio, check out threeringradio.com. This was part two of a three-part conversation I'm having with High Priest of the Church of Satan, Peter H. Gilmore. What a cool dude, huh? Who'd have thunk it? Who'd have thunk it? He'd be talking to me. Yeah, what... I'm very impressed. That's one of the reasons I'm very impressed by Mr. Gilmore. And I was very impressed when I met Anton LaVey. They took the time to take someone like me seriously. And I just think that's the shit. You know, they're cool guys. Aunt LaVey was a cool guy, and Peter is a cool guy, and I can see why. He's the head of the Church of Satan. Tune in next week for part three of my conversation with Peter Gilmore.
They're flat evil.
The evildoers are continuing to try to harm America and Americans.
The evildoers, hands of evildoers. There's no shadow of the world dark enough for them to kind of slither around in. There's a real threat. There are people who want to use death. They want to murder innocent lives.